Welcome into the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NBA, what's going down there. We'll be discussing March Madness. We have a little bit of news in college sports, a little bit of breaking news in college sports before this show is recorded. And of course, we will have Jack's hot take. Now, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, wherever you get your podcast. And also, don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube show, JTS After Dark, and I'll post the subscription to that as we partner with IMS Productions in that. Don't forget to follow them as well at IMS Productions 2023 on Instagram. Topics today, like I said, will include the NBA, some little March Madness. We'll have some Jack's Hot Take. And as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show on a Wednesday afternoon. One of the few shows all year, and I love these shows. It's one of the few shows all year that I'm going to record, edit, and immediately push out. Because I'm not recording late at night. I'm not recording it, you know, early in the morning. It's one of those situations where it's a Wednesday afternoon. It's about 1:34 local time. I'm going to record the show, edit it, and then it'll probably be out within the hour of me finishing it. I love these shows because it gets really raw right in that moment. It's like, you know, a lot of times I'm recording, I say Tuesday night, before the games even start on a Wednesday, and then like the next morning, I mean, that night, something huge happens or some big news breaks or something, then, you know, the show feels a little outdated. 95% of the show is still incredibly accurate, but especially with the NBA, with the standings being so tight, you know, a couple teams have the same record within a half game of each other. So when, you know, people play our game with each other, people play, lose, and all of a sudden the standings completely flip, you know, and it's not a huge issue, but it is something that could become a problem if you're listening for the standings updates. But I call these shows Insta releases, where it's recorded, it's edited, and it's out within the hour. So I love these shows. Like, I only get to do them a few times a year. For those of you who do listen often, you guys know I'm a teacher and I coach high school football. Quote-unquote, my real job. I coach high school football. So a lot of time, I don't get the chance to record midday. Spring break's on. I get a chance to record midday. It's pretty dope. Take you a little bit behind the scenes. For those of you who are looking for the next JTS After Dark episode, recorded it last night. So it should be out probably no later than tomorrow. So you guys will get this show today, and then JTS After Dark with Jai from Hey Jai, with our partnership with IMS Productions. You guys will have that show no later than tomorrow. And of course, I'll link the channel in the description of this episode. So you guys will have that ready to go as well whenever you get this episode. And if you listen to it, you either all want to see the past two episodes of JCS After Dark, you can immediately just go to the YouTube channel and subscribe on there. And of course, as always, like, rate, and subscribe wherever you're getting this podcast, whatever service you use, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, etc. But anyway, let's get into business. Of course, before I get into the NBA, a little bit of breaking news on the NCAA front. LSU superstar forward Angel Reese has officially declared for the WNBA draft. Of course, she had 48 hours to do so following her team's loss to Iowa. We'll discuss that a lot more in the Elite Eight. She had 48 hours to declare. She declares in a big, massive Vogue spread. She announces it in Vogue. She announces it on social media. Like I said, she does a big Vogue magazine shoot, announces it in there. And of course, she puts out a couple videos. She's thanking people now. And we'll talk about that more. We discuss her actually in the March Madness B block. We'll discuss her, but that was the breaking news that happened all of about 2 hours ago. Before I was able to get to record the show. So as an LSU fan, as a women's basketball fan, but as an LSU fan first, thank you to Angel Reese on her career. She helped revitalize the program. Yes, Kim Mulkey, right? Like, obviously, Kim Mulkey was driving for us. Angel Reese is not here without Kim Mulkey. So Kim Mulkey is getting number one credit, but it needed a superstar. You know, it needed somebody that as LSU fans could glean onto and to glean to and to be a kind of a beacon, like, okay, that's LSU basketball. That's LSU women's basketball. Hell, that's LSU's basketball. Right, like I said, we'll get into more of her career accolades and stuff when we get to the segment, but just thank you to her for what she was able to do for the program. And we'll get into it more. This is the NBA segment, right? Dave blocks NBA, but that was the breaking news, so thank you to her. And we appreciate that from her. Like I said, we'll talk a lot more about her in our next segment. But anyway, back to the purpose of this A-block, back to what this A-block's actually supposed to be about. And that is the NBA. That is the NBA standings. That is the NBA as we're roaring towards the playoffs. A lot of these teams have 15 games left. 17 games left. Like, we're not talking a lot of games left on the NBA schedule. We're getting to that point where it's go time. For a lot of people. Just doing some math. Yeah, the Lakers have less than that. The Lakers have played 76 games. They got 6 games left. I had my brain all messed up. There's 6 games left. In the season for a lot of, between 6 to 8 for a lot of people left in the league. It's go time. I mean, it's past the point of like, oh, such and such can jump 2-3 seeds. Like, nah, you're trying to get up one or trying to avoid this team, or if you're truly in tank mode, or you're trying to maneuver a draft pick, that's pretty much the only way to really maneuver at this point. But let's go through the standings today. We'll discuss it a little bit more. Of course, you got the going out east. You got the Boston Celtics, easily the best record in the NBA. As we said before, the gap right now at 140 on a Wednesday, the gap right now from first in the East to second in the East is bigger than the gap from first in the West to 10th in the West. That tells you how far ahead Boston has run from the rest of the conference. But they're 12 games in front of Milwaukee. So Boston so far out, we're not even going to discuss Boston. We're not going to discuss the games back from Boston. It's not fair. It's not fun. Right? So Milwaukee's now number 2. Game and a half back from Milwaukee is Cleveland. 3 games back from Milwaukee is Orlando. with the same exact games back as the Knicks. So the Magic and the Knicks are both 15 back from first, but they're 3 games back from second. Indiana is 16 and a half back from one, but they're 4.5 back from two. And they'd be the last team right now in the playoffs. In the play-in tournament, we're looking at currently the Heat are a half game back from sixth. The 76ers are 2 back from sixth. The Chicago Bulls are seven games back from sixth. And the Atlanta Hawks are 7.5 games back from sixth. And then our West, much, much tighter. The Nuggets are with the 1 seed currently. The T-Wolves are a half game back. Also a half game back of the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Clippers are 5.5 back. The Mavs and the Pelicans are 7.5 back. They'd round out the playoffs in the play-in tournament. The Kings are 8.5 back, 1 game back from 6th. The Suns are also 1 game back from 6th. The Lakers are 2.5 games back from 6th. And the Warriors are 4 games back from 6th. So the Warriors are pretty much in the play-in tournament. They're trying to figure out now if they can get that 9-10 game at home. But they're in the play-in tournament. Houston has fallen off. They've lost their last 2. Warriors have won their last 5. And at this point, the Rockets overachieving, or the beginning of their overachieving season, is over. It was fun, but it's like I predicted in the preseason predictions. You were already a young team, right? Ime Udoka was coming in following the scandal with the Boston Celtics. He should still be the head man in Boston. But following the scandal with the Boston Celtics, Ime Udoka comes in. What do you give Ime Udoka? You give him very, very expensive, 2 very, very inefficient shooters. There was only 2 shooters in the NBA. There was only 2 players in the NBA last season that were high volume or even medium volume shooters that shot under 40% from the field. They were Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. The Houston Rockets decided, let's play them both. Let's play them both. Let's give them a whole lot of money. Dylan Brooks was near 100. Fred VanVleet pretty much feels like, I think his deal was, it was weird, had a bunch of opt-outs, but he had big dollar money as well. I didn't understand the building with the Rockets. In hindsight, I still don't. Your young players are mostly guards. I mean, you got Alperen Sengun, but your young players are mostly guards. You look at the Jalen Greens. You look at your Atari East. He's more of a wing, but you look at a lot of your young talent. A lot of your young talent was guards. I didn't understand it. Because if you have Jalen Green on the floor, then Fred VanVleet, you're taking the ball out of Jalen Green's hands because Fred VanVleet thought the ball is useless. So, I just don't understand the building. And then you paid a lot of money for it to be built incorrectly. And it showed. It showed all season. Even with as great as the coach Ime Udoka was, it pretty much showed all season. They actually played better winning-wise without Alperen Sengun, who's probably their best player, because it allowed them to put another guard on the floor. They went smaller and they put more guards on the floor, more of their young talent was able to play. I didn't understand the move. Still don't, to be honest with you. And the Warriors are showing that championship grit. They're showing that championship medal, that championship battle. Those guys have been battle tested, man. Draymond's been battle tested. He's had his moments this year. He's had plenty of them this season, but he's been battle tested. He's the guy that's been in the trenches. He's been in those wars. He's been to those, 5 finals or 6 finals in this era. The Steph has 4 rings, and they lost to Kawhi and LeBron. So yeah, they've been to 6 finals in this time during Draymond's time. Like, he's been there, but that's one of those finals, right? So he's battle tested. He's battle ready. Klay Thompson, don't care if he's a shell of his former self. He's been in those 6 finals as well. Steph Curry, of course, even at age, 35, 36, he's in those 6 finals as well. Like, you have a lot of these guys. Now, some of the guys, not a lot of the guys are new. Like, Kuminga, I think, was in one of those finals. Those guys are new. Moody, Davis Price, I think is his name, or Davis Jackson, something of those nature. Like, those guys are new. Gary Payton Jr. was in a couple of those finals. Like, those guys are mostly new, but your big 3, the guys who you lean on around this time of the year, they was in all those wars. They've been with them well. And so they're battle testing. They're showing that championship grit. And so shout out to the Warriors. They look dead in the water. They're like the Rockets are going to easily catch them. Like, 2 weeks ago, I think the last time I did a show, I was saying, like, yo, the Rockets are going to get them. They're only a game back. The Rockets can't lose. And the Warriors can't win. The Rockets are going to catch them. And Rockets stumbled. The Warriors took off. So shout out to them. It's a lot for them to have battled throughout this season, throughout this era, really, especially the second half of it, the post-championship dynasty. The post-dynasty years always hurts because it's like, I remember what we were not too long ago, and we can't get to that. And so we're in the post-dynasty era with this iteration of the Warriors, and it hurts to look at times, but they're going to find a way to squeak to the play-in tournament. Now, I think they get smoked by the Lakers in the first game. I think the Lakers blew them out. But they're going to get their way into this play-in tournament and still have something to play for towards the end of the year. Of the Lakers, speaking of those Lakers, they are sitting at 43 wins and 33 losses. 43 wins last year was at the fourth seed, like at the end of the year. Like, or this time last year, 43 wins at the fourth seed. Right now, they're ninth. I saw something recently where this is going to be the most winning teams the NBA has ever had, like the most teams above 500 that the NBA has ever seen. I think that has to do with a few factors. Number one, there's more open tanking now, so there's more easy dubs on the schedule. Like Utah, for instance, Utah doesn't want to win games. Like, there's more easy dubs on the schedule. But also, what I think is you're getting a lot of, how can I put this? You're getting a lot of talent gap in a way, but not player, organizational. I think everybody was building a certain way in the 80s. Everybody built a certain way in the 90s. I think now, organizationally, there's such a talent gap in the building that, you know, competitiveness is a thing. Because now my management team is so much better than your management team, or my trainer is so much better than your trainer. That's also keeping some of these good teams really, really good. And also the play-in tournament. Like, a few years ago, the Warriors would be trying to finesse their way into a draft position. Like, look, we're 4 games out with 6 left. We're 4 games out with 10 left. Like, we're not going to catch up. Draymond has pulled a hammy. Steph's got an eye soreness. You know, like, we're going to try and either keep our pick, protect our pick, or move our pick up. Juxtapose that to now, they win 2 games right after the season ends and they're in the playoffs. You know, so they're constantly competing. So now even those teams are now smashing the bad teams, you know? And there's more people competing for the ring because of the play-in tournament. There's 20 teams right now that can actively win. The Rockets are still trying. They're the 11th seed. They're still playing really, really, really hard because the Warriors lose 2 games of these last 6. The Rockets could get in. You know, so now they're playing really hard, trying to keep it close with the Warriors, and making sure that the Warriors know that they're right behind them at any and all time. So I kind of love the play-in tournament because it's making guys compete, but also there's a record number of really good teams this year. This is going to be a record number of teams that finish above 500. A few teams are rolling right now, namely the Dallas Mavericks. They're 8-2 over their last 10. Oh, Luka has done some absolute, I wouldn't call it Luka magic, Luka ridiculousness. Like against the Bears when he flicks the ball underhanded from the three-point line as time expires and cashes it. Like, no backboard, hardly any rim, absolute bucket. From, you know, 26 feet away, like around a defender. It was insane, right? And Kyrie Irving's been Kyrie Irving. But what Dallas decided to do, and it's a strategy I wish a lot of other teams did, Dallas decided to start defense. I have Luka and Kyrie. I'm going to be able to score the ball, right? But they had scorers and shooters around them. They kind of went bump all that. They started length, and they started guys who could play defense. Because when you got Luka and Kyrie, you're going to need guys who could play defense. Because those two won't. Not necessarily can't, but they won't, right? So you're going to need guys around them who can play defense. Dallas, Jason Kidd smartly put a lot of young youth length on the floor, and that is allowing their defense to improve, and vice versa. Their talent and their record has improved drastically since more defensive lineups were implemented by Jason Kidd. Speaking of ridiculousness, his name is Victor Wembanyama. Over the past month, Victor has shown flashes of that player. We said that, you know, people were saying the floor was Hakeem. Like, oh, the ceiling is a player we've never seen before. and the floor is Hakeem Olajuwon. And everybody's like, you do realize Hakeem Olajuwon is one of like the 15 greatest players ever. You're saying that the worst he's that? Like, I'll be honest. Yeah. I mean, he's already posted a 40-20 game. He beat the Knicks. Josh Hart had 61. Not Josh Hart. Jalen Brunson put up 61. And he went home with an L. Because Victor Wembanyama had 40-20 with some blocks and some assists. And a $25,000 fine for throwing the ball into the bleachers. You know, and now Victor, you know, say that he seems to throw the ball in a crowd in anger. Nothing ever happens to them. But I think the significance of the ball is what made it being a stink, and the Knicks raised a stink about it. Because Brunson had 61. Dante DiVincenzo had made the most threes by a franchise player. And then Victor himself went for 40-20. You know, that doesn't happen ever, especially by a rookie. Now, ultimately, a staffer, believe. Nick Stafford went and got the ball back. But as man, Wimby did it out of celebration. It wasn't malicious, I don't think. I haven't had a reason to think Wimby would do something malicious. Like, if it was Draymond, I would assume it was malicious, right? Like, certain guys have reputations. Wimby hasn't shown anything besides his little bit of ego that you gotta kind of see. It's a little ego in there. But he's not. He hasn't shown anything malicious. So I'm like, oh, he chucked the ball in the stand so Brunson couldn't get it. Like, he would have just kept it. You know what I'm saying? Because his response could have been, I had 40-20. Like, yeah, it's 61 for him or 9-3 for him. I had 40-20. So very curious to see how they got the ball back. Like, I wonder what those negotiations were. I always wonder, and this is a piece on the sidetrack, right? I always wonder when they have, like, a historical moment and they send, like, the little staffer, like the way down the bench coach or like an arena person to go like talk to the person, are they authorized with a certain amount of stuff? Cause I know it was a big home run ball. It wasn't Barry Bonds' ball, obviously, but it was a big home run ball. I want to say it was an Astro situation. And the guy ended up like getting a whole bunch of sign gear. He got like tickets for something and he ended up with, he didn't get any cash. He didn't get any hard cash. But he got, like, a bunch of signed merchandise. He ended up with tickets and something else he ended up getting. But I'm saying, like, I wonder if they, like, almost like a hostage negotiation, not to draw any kind of parallel to it, but almost like a hostage negotiation where they authorize, okay, you can spend up to whatever on this hostage to get this person back. Like, I wonder if that's how it goes. Like, they go... And, like, okay, they have so much stuff in their head that, like, I can offer this to get it back. Or do they let the fan say, they go, like, what do you want for the ball? And then the fan goes, oh, I want blah, 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 blah. And then they go to people who can make that decision and go, they want blah, 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 and they approve it. Like, I wonder if that's, like, how it goes, or if they go in with, like, stuff in their head they can offer. I've always been curious about that. Because I know if I had that basketball, I want playoff tickets. Like, straight up, I want this seat in the playoffs, this seat or better. I want courtside seats to a playoff game. Like, that's what I want. Right? Like, that would be my asking first. Like, the ball, okay, it doesn't matter. Like, it's one of those things we have to prove it's the ball from the game. And I guess you could do a serial number or whatever. Who cares, right? I want playoff seats, floor seats to a playoff game. That's what I want. You got a ball. Yeah, it'd be something like that, right? Or do they go in saying, like, okay, so much gear, so much cash, blah, 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 blah. They can offer. I've always been curious about that. Total side note, total, like, liberty being this my show. Like, total side note, but I've always been curious about that. So if somebody, like, knows that process or been through it, like, at me or tag me or, like, send me the article or something like that, going through it, but I've always been curious about that. And finally, on the NBA tip, Joel Embiid has returned. He got 24 points last night. Definitely looked tired at the end of the game. He hasn't played a real game since January 30th. It is April 3rd. So he played April 2nd. He's been out over 2 months with his meniscus injury. But he scored 24 points in his first game back. Like, that's going to be huge. And he's going to get just about 6 to 8 games of. He's going to probably play in 5 of them. So he'll get 6 more real games. And then if they get to the 6th seed, because they're only 2 away from Indiana. If they get to the 6th seed, they have a week off. So he may push himself through these games
and then get the week off to completely rehab, to completely heal, to completely condition, whatever. And he shows up at, let's say Cleveland has a three seed. He gets Cleveland and it's Joel Embiid. Or Orlando catches Cleveland and you have this amazing, magical season and it's Joel Embiid. Or if you think about it, if you're Boston or Milwaukee, you had this Boston, this amazing season. You've blown away everybody and your reward is Joel Embiid. Because the NBA, like, you know what I'm saying? Or Milwaukee, you've already struggled to go through this. You fired a coach to try and win. You got Dame. You get the second seed and blah, 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 blah. And your reward is Joel Embiid. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just not fun for anybody. I would hate that personally. But that's the situation that arises right now in the NBA with Embiid being back. Like I say, I assume if they have 8 games left, he's going to play in 6 of them. If they go 5-1 against, he plays split the one he doesn't. Let's just say they go 6-2. There's a good chance they can end up in the 60. They're only 2 games out. So that is something to keep our eye on there. But up next, we're going to shift to March Madness and discuss what is and what isn't. Welcome into the show, or well, back into the show, really, into our B block, which is beyond March Madness segment this week. Very excited to be discussing March Madness with you guys. We're going to start off with the men, get it out of the way, get it over, no one cares. It's come down to the Final Four of UConn, Purdue, NC State, and I promise you, I have no idea who UConn's playing. Seriously, I have no clue. I know NC State's in. I know UConn's in because they have their girls and their boys in, or their men and their women, if you prefer that. But they have, apparently UConn's playing Alabama. I should know that. I'm an SEC guy. But, hey, apparently UConn's playing Alabama. But, of course, the big matchup in the men's side is Zach Edney versus DJ Burns Jr., the reigning National Player of the Year, Zach Edney from Purdue, and DJ Burns Jr. from NC State. Burns has caught a lot of national attention for being like Zach Randolph, honestly. He's an undersized big, but he's got a nice touch. He's physical. He bodies down low. He was talking noise back to Duke fans when he sent them home. And NC State, I mean, they were the 11th seed. They were a shot away in the conference champion, in the conference tournament, not even making it to the NCAA tournament. They only got in because they won their conference tournament. And they were the 11th seed, and they've been on a run ever since. Shout out DJ Burns, man. He's one of those guys that he's garnering NFL attention because he's listed as 6'9", 275. Most people say when they've got to him, he's 6'7". You know, he's about 6'7", probably 275 is accurate. But 6'7", you know, I see what he steps on the scale at, but 275 is probably more accurate. And then 6'7", instead of 6'9". 6'7", 280 is a hell of a left tackle or a right tackle. A lot of people are saying that he should enter the NFL draft. You have people saying that he should go work out because NC State's pro day, football pro day, is a week after the Final Four. So people are saying, like, man, he could go play, he could go do the Final Four and then learn how to kick step, basically, and work out at the pro day. Bench, jump, run the 40, do like the L drills, and then basically be a project. And at that size and footwork, you can imagine he'd be a pretty good tackle. What's your name? Offensive tackle probably be his, because his body type. He could probably be a pretty good offensive tackle. He'd have to learn football, of course, if he's never played it. Admittedly, I didn't deep dive too far into his backstory, but obviously he had to play at the collegiate level. So he'd have to learn NFL football. He'd have to learn how to block. But he's not going to be in the NBA. He's a 6'7" center, right? Like, and not even a new style center. He really doesn't dribble and can't shoot past mid-range. Like, he's not very athletic vertically. So he's not an NBA player, right? He's not a Euro. He's not big enough. So if he's going to play professional sports, it would behoove him to at least consider the NFL. Not football isn't for everybody. He may have tried football when he was younger and hated it. But he's never flat out denied it. I know he's heard it. multiple NFL guys are talking about it. Peter Schrager is one of them, saying that, no, the NFL interest in him is real. Multiple GMs and stuff have kind of looked at him and said, what if with that body? So I'm sure he's heard it. If he has a representative, they would, be committing professional malfeasance if they don't even mention it to him. Okay, the NFL's calling. A couple GMs have reached out to me and said, you know, would your guy be interested in the tryout? Would your guy be interested in working on his pro day, et cetera, et cetera? Like, to me, he would garner, especially a pro day so late, he would garner a lot of interest, even if a team just sends the regional scout, whoever the regional scout is, you know, sends him, like, hey, go take a look at that kid, or go film it for him, just to see how he looks. You see his body. He's in a t-shirt. He's in a jersey and shorts. But you see his body. Just how would he look in a football situation? You know, have him bench press, have him squat, have him do vertical, do like the L drill, just agility stuff. Of course, kick stepping is not going to be a thing for him. He's probably never done it. Or if he's done it, it's been so long, he's used to, you know, back people down the post. But, you know, that's kind of where his career athletically is going to go. Now, I was talking to a few people. They said, no, he's going to be an academic kid. Like, he's a good basketball player, but he went to school for, like, a real degree. So, odds are he's going to use that very real degree to go make money in life. But to me, I think he should at least give the NFL a crack. Now, his competitor, Zach Edney, he's not an NBA center either. He's going to be one hell of a Euro. People say he's 7'4" and he's dominated. Yeah, he's dominated in college, he's 7'4". The NBA has moved away from big, slow, plodding, back-to-the-basket style centers that don't really shoot. It's called Jahlil Okafor. Like, that didn't work then, and the NBA is further away from it now. Like LeBron spoke about in his episode 3 of Mind the Game, like, Eric Spoelstra went to Oregon and learned spread offense football and then translated it back to basketball. Like, that's what people are doing now. Like, the big style center like Zach Edey doesn't work. And he's not even athletic like Steven Adams, like, or Nick Claxton, where they're vertical off the floor and flying. Like, that big, plodding, slow style doesn't really work in the NBA anymore. The game has moved away from that. Now, in Europe, that's most of the centers. You know, he can go dominate in Europe. I think he'll make a hell of a lot of money in Europe. If I'm him, I try the NBA out. I'm a lottery pick. I play that rookie contract. But if it's looking like I'm going to be a 1 year, $5 million guy, or 2 years, $10 million kind of guy, I'm taking my talents to Europe or Australia. And I'm going to play overseas because they still play that way. With the big guy in the middle, feed him in the post, backs down, and he's physical, and you can hit stuff off the rim and it's not a goaltend. Like, so I think Zach Edey is going to make one hell of a Euro. And UConn's been dominant. UConn's been dominating everybody, right? They've been blowing everybody out. Their last two tournaments, which they won last year, and they are well on their way to winning again this year. They haven't had a game under double digits. They have been destroying people. I expect that to continue against Alabama. I expect UConn to roll to their second straight national title. But on to the women's side, the interesting side, the side that anybody cares about. We already spoke about one of the stars is gone. Angel Reese has declared for the WNBA draft, and her last game was against Iowa and Caitlin Clark. Now, you're going to see this on the YouTube show, JTS After Dark, kind of the anecdotal breakdown of the game. But Caitlin Clark was on fire. She hit 9 threes, I believe, 9 out of 18. She was raining them from everywhere, mostly just into her left. The scouting report is out on her. Press up on her. Don't drop coverage. Make her go right. Because at least if she goes right, she's going to drive most of the time. And you take your chance on the other shooters, but you don't let her fade to her left, bombing the way through. Like, she wants to go that way. That's a practice shot for her. And Jai on the YouTube show was like, yeah, you rather a fading three or a layup, or open three on her teammates. An open three from one of her teammates. Hannah Stalky can have all the threes she wants. Caitlin Clark fading left, that's her shot. 28 feet fading a little bit to the left is her shot. I'm not going to let her keep firing that shot away. I disagree with Kim Mulkey's decision to put Haley Van Lith on her. I especially disagree as I found out Haley Van Lith had an IV in her body earlier that day, and she was struggling to breathe because she was legitimately sick. And you have her chasing around one of the more mobile, one of the more active guards in the country who shoots from literally anywhere, so there's no time to breathe and release and try to get your thoughts right together because you have to be on one all possession because Caitlin Clark can fire from literally anywhere in the state of Albany. Anywhere in the state, in the city of Albany, she can fire from. And so having Van Lith chase her around the situation, I thought was a mistake to begin with. Like I said, added even more finding out Van Lith was sick. You have a two-way player who seen her up close and personal last year, saw how Alexis Morris defended her last year, and Flaw J. Johnson, who's been our best two-way player, and you decide to not do that until fourth quarter, and Flazzy has three fouls, so even then she couldn't really get two into it because she had three fouls already. I thought that was a poor decision. I thought having our bigs and drop coverage on the pick was a poor decision. So now when Caitlin Clark comes around that screen, but at first LSU guards were going under, so Caitlin's just bombing open threes because they're going under. Then they started going over where the bigs and drop coverage. So now once they go over in the bigs and drop, it's still an open three. So I just thought that Kim Mulkey didn't have the best game plan ready to go. They have been fighting a lot of external issues. Kim Mulkey, of course, was threatening the defamation lawsuit against the Washington Post for their article that came out. Very non-defaming article. There was nothing in the article that would shock you. The only thing that, to me, she would get in hot-ish water for was her stance on the LGBT community. And I think that she was the front for the university because they, you know, Baylor is the biggest Baptist university in the country. And I think she was the mouthpiece for the university in regards to her stance to the LGBT community. But she had players on the team that she would make jokes at. Dede Richards. Miss Dede Richards. She had the big giant puffs and she had colorful hair. And so one day, Dede recalls Kim walking up to her and going, and I quote, you and those damn hair colors. And are you going to wear those two ponytails every game kind of thing? Like, and Dede took it in jest, but it was definitely a situation where if you didn't take it in jest or you weren't used to Kim Mulkey being Kim Mulkey, you could be offended, right? And that was, like I said, the only thing that to me that could get her in hot water really was her stance with the LGBT community. It also, in the Post article, discussed that Kim hadn't spoken to her father in 37 years and her sister in 5 to 6. And then, you know, that wasn't that bad. But then the LA Times article comes out referencing LSU as dirty debutantes, which I Google the term dirty debutante to find out what that is. But it's appalling to call anyone that. It's definitely appalling to call young women that. That you don't know, no affiliation with, you call them this because they're black and loud. And so that was supposed to be a dig at Southerners because it was UCLA versus LSU. So debutante is a popular Southern phrase. So I think it was a dig at Southerners, you dirty debutantes, but it's also a double entendre with what dirty debutante actually means. So that was pretty outrageous, and Kim Mulkey got to talk about that, and so did Haley Van Lith and others. But getting to the game itself, they said Caitlin was raining through from everywhere. She was the best player on the floor. The game turned early second quarter, right? And Iowa jumped out early. Caitlin hit a couple of big ones. They're getting help from the others. LSU's not really doing anything. It gets nervous in my house, right? And then Angel Reese, she must have known this is my last league game. She was going. She was ready to go. She's stealing passes. She's blocking shots. At one point, she blocks Caitlin Clark. And she's rolling. I mean, I think after the first quarter, she has like 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. I mean, she's rolling, and LSU actually charges. They were down like 10 too early, and then she turns up. And I was yelling at TV. I'm like, no one in Iowa can guard you, right? And so we can just hold it down on defense. We're there with all the others, Caitlin notwithstanding. No one in Iowa can guard you. Keep going, keep attacking, whatever. And she blocks, I think she blocks Caitlin again. And yeah, she does. She blocks Caitlin again. And as she's kind of jogging, kind of a safe area, you know, like when you come down, a lot of times you see the guys are running a couple rows into the bleachers. It's a safe area. You can come down and kind of get your feet. And as she's going into the perceived safe area, she's still kind of halfway looking back. Because once you plot your course out, just go straight, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't turn. She's still halfway kind of looking back to see which way the ball's going, etc. And she trips on something. And they never show what she trips on. And I'm sure there's a camera that's seen it. But she stumbles on something. She goes down and she gets up hobbling. She injured the ankle in the SEC tournament. Of course, there's no real rest for the weary. It probably was a mid-ankle sprain. It wasn't high, of course, she'll be playing. But it's an ankle sprain. What do you do for ankle sprain? You rest. What do you not have time to do on an SEC tournament, then into the NCAA tournament? Rest. So she, the longest time period she would have had to rest had been about a week. From the conference championship game to the start of round 64, and then she's been playing every weekend. And she re-rolls it. And after that, her offense changes. I mean, she finishes with, for the rest of three quarters, 7 points and 15 rebounds. She had all the rebounds she wanted, but it was the explosion of her second jump. Now she's not as quick on her movements. And LSU's offense took a nosedive, and Caitlin Clark kept hitting. She had a couple of teammates that hit some big shots. Hannah Stolke. I think the girl's last name is Morgan. I can't think of her last name right now. But she was making shots, and it was Iowa's night. In a best of seven, I would probably go LSU 4-2. But it was Iowa's night, and or 4-3 LSU. But you know, that's the NCAA tournament. It's one shot. Iowa was the one seed for a reason, and like I said, they made shots when they had to. When Caitlin went to a nosedive, a couple of her teammates made shots. And so that's what kept Iowa in it. And they ended up on one leg. Haley was sick. Aaliyah Del Azaro looked like she wanted no part of that game when Angel got hurt. And kudos to Iowa for moving on. Game broke a lot of records. It's been widely discussed. I posted it, but I'll discuss it here. 12.3 million average viewers. It was the most watched ESPN telecast sports-wise. ESPN broadcast of sports. Most watched female game ever. Most watched male or female game this season. It outdid everything on the ESPN platforms except for like two college, Michigan, Ohio State, and I think the national championship game. And then it outdid every NBA game but Game 5 of the NBA Finals. It outperformed every MLB game. And the NFL doesn't count. So, kudos to those ladies, man. They put on an absolute show, right? And so it almost like didn't get come down. If everybody's watching for all the off-the-court stuff and all the social media stuff and everything that happened centered around LSU Iowa last year, it gets culminated on Monday night. Angel Reese breaks down. She breaks down in tears when they ask her about her teammates, not because she lost. That's a narrative that was painted and edited a certain way. She didn't cry because they lost. She cried because her teammates started defending her and what she goes through off the court. Then she broke down and spoke about everything she's been going through since she won the championship. Sexism, racism. She's been sexualized. She spoke about how she hasn't truly been happy since she won. She said she hasn't had a happy day since she won the title. Like, since they won the title last year, like I said, since I won, they haven't had a happy day. Her team defended her and spoke about her very highly, and what she was able, what she's doing for them, along with what she did for LSU. So, like I said, we started it, but kudos, absolutely kudos to her and an amazing career. She's two-time All-American team, two-time Wooden American team, I believe. She's a Wooden Award finalist last year, SEC Player of the Year, I believe both years she was at LSU. Double-double queen, NIL legend. What she did for the NIL game, I mean, she's the reason why a lot of these female athletes have NIL deals. I'm going to be honest. Angel Reese was so successful at it that her marketability showed they could do it to everybody else. NIL legend. You know, she was a brand. She was the Bayou Barbie. She was I mean, she was everything to women's basketball what she had to be. And it was a heavy crown. She wore a crown a lot, and when people thought it was braggy, it was symbolic because her head wore a crown. She had a heavy crown to bear a lot. She was the face of, let's be honest here, she was, and to be honest, is the face of Black America girl of female basketball. Like, because the women's college game has surpassed the WNBA popularity, has surpassed men's college basketball popularity, she was the face of Black America basketball, collegiately. It was Angel Reese. Who's the best player in college basketball right now? Don't worry. Like, I'll wait. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, pause it if you got to. Think about it. Like, you don't have the answers to that. She was the face of the movement. A lot of these young girls want to be Angel Reese. Like, so that's a level of pressure that 15 months ago she didn't know. I mean, they won the title around the same time last year. 13 months, she didn't know. When LSU was just a really good team, led by her, a freshman named Flajee Johnson, who rapped and hooped. Like, Flajee had a bigger presence because Flajee had the Roc Nation deal. Like, she was on America's Got Talent, like, all-stars, and then she went to LSU. Like, she had a bigger crossover representation. People were talking about Alexis Morris, who's completely off her rocker now. People were talking about Alexis Morris. And it was a team thing. And then, but the Bayou Barbie was a brand, but she wasn't what she is now. And I get it, man. Like, her and Caitlin Clark got thrust in the middle of a race war on Twitter. Like, just from playing basketball. Neither one of them incited it. Neither one of them really participated in it. They've done their best to quell it. Like, no, we don't hate each other. We like each other off the court. Like, we kick it. Like, we're both plan on representing Team USA one day, like, that sort of thing. And they got thrust into the middle of a race war. Like, that's the stuff Andrews had to deal with while she's been in college. I wish she would have came back one more year selfishly, because I would have loved to see that team put together. And I would have loved to see, like, her, Haley Van Lith, as far as I know, hasn't declared. So, you know, she'll be back. But I would have loved to see that whole squad come back one more year and then go for it. You know, Nisa Morrow, Flajee, and Angel, and Haley, and last year Poa, I think it's a senior, right? No, she didn't have a senior day. Last year Poa, Michaela Williams, the transfer from Arkansas, you get the other big bang. I would love to see it happen as an LSU fan, but I understand Angel probably just wanted to get away from the pressure for a little while. Because all those same expectations and standards and that crown that she wore at LSU would have been placed back on her head, because now you're a fifth-year senior, you're coming back for one reason. You either come back because you're a gold digger, or you're coming back because you expect to win a title. Not a gold digger, but you're trying to make as much money as you can. Which, financially, and before we move into the next game, financially, she's making the bad decision. Like, you can't tell me otherwise. She's going to get drafted around pick 7. Her contract's going to be $68,000, $70,000 when she signs her name. Now, she has a hell of an off-the-court press on. So, logically, she'll grind during the summer. And then as soon as her WNBA season ends, she goes and does Vogue. She goes and does modeling. She goes and does extensions and talk shows and appearances. She popped into pop culture, being in the Cardi B song with the bar, "Ball So Hard, I Feel Like I Go to LSU," and then she had Angel Reese in the video. You know, like, that sort of stuff. And, she can come back to LSU and, she can do all these things, but financially, I know she has a Raising Cane's deal. That's because she's at LSU. I know she has, it's another local-ish, she has Mercedes-Benz deal or BR, like, that's an LSU-tied deal. And it's another deal she has that's incredibly specific to her, Gordon McKernan, that's very specific, very high-paid NIL deals, her tied to being LSU. Now, she has her Reebok, which she has not pushed at all, because she's been at LSU, she's a Nike school. So now that she's leaving, I'm sure Shaq's about to blast her all everywhere for a Reebok. So that's going to be big. She's picked up a couple of national ads as well. But marketability-wise, if I have Caitlin Clark and I have Angel Reese, marketability-wise, Caitlin's got the advantage. because they're both going to come out together. They both have the same playing field. Kalen has the advantage. Now, Kalen going to the Indiana Fever, and Angel, if she would have returned to LSU, Angel would have had the NIL advantage. She would have had the endorsement advantage. But, of course, she decided to move on. I can't blame her. Kudos to her. I'll be watching whatever team she's on very carefully, like I do with all the LSU players that go. But I'll be watching very carefully what team she goes to. But then the next game, the second game, was the future versus the current. Paige Beckers and the UConn Huskies, what's left of them, versus Juju Watkins and the USC Trojans. It was a battle of the last person in the class of 2020 to still be around. That high school class was Camila Cardoza, Angel Reese, Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, and Cameron Brink, the big out of Stanford. They were all one high school class, class of 2020. So now Paige is the last one left because Angel's gone. Camila, Cameron, Angel, and Caitlin all had the option to come back for the fifth year because of that COVID year. They all passed. They all declared together. And Paige Beckers, I truly think due to her injury, decided she was going to come back. She decided that early, about a month and a half ago. She decided she was going to go back to UConn. I said, I'm pretty sure because of her injury, she made that decision because she missed all of last season. But so she's the last of the class of 2020, which is a super class. Juju Watkins is the leader of the class 2024, which is a super class. It's Juju Watkins. It's Michaela Williams at LSU. It's Fuwale, Malaysia Fuwale at South Carolina, just to name a few of them. Like, that's going to be a class we're going to look back on in 3 years and go, my goodness. You know, Fuwale may have with two titles. Michaela might have one, and Juju might have the other one. Like, they may end up splitting the four titles in their 4 years. Just the level in that group, and they delivered. You know, it went from star v star, went from megastar to megastar in Angel versus Caitlin, and went to superstar to superstar in Juju versus Paige, and they delivered. Both of those ladies put on a show. Paige Beckers led her team to victory, and I spoke about it with people. I expected UConn to win the game, and that's because UConn, as beat up as they were, Juju didn't have Aaliyah Edwards on her team. Right? Like, Aaliyah Edwards is going to be a top 10 pick in the WNBA draft. Juju didn't have that. The better coach is Gina Auriemma. Right? So you go with the better coach, older, more experienced person, used to being like moments like Paige's first year. Did they win with her freshman year? Or they got close her freshman year. Then they went to the Final Four her sophomore year. She blows her knee her junior year. Kind of her redshirt junior year, basically. They're back in the Final Four. But she's been there, right? And she's on a mission. And she's big in her faith, big in God, and she's God-led right now. So she's on a roll. She's on a mission. And Juju didn't have help. Juju's literally playing with Ivy Leaguers. And I mean no disrespect to the Ivy League. You guys are smarter than me by a long shot. I could never have dreamed of getting to Harvard. Okay, it's not good. But, you know, Harvard wasn't my thing, right? Like that. Well, I wasn't doing that. You were able to be a high school athlete and get into Harvard. Kudos to you, right? But there's a different level of athlete. Not in Harvard. Let's be honest here, right? And it's literally Juju Watkins and a team of Ivy Leaguers. Like, and she carried them as an 18-year-old to the Elite Eight. And shout out to her. I mean, she shot, literally, look at the shot chart. They only played like seven people. She shot 26-ish times. Number 25, whose name I don't know, shot like the same amount of times, and nobody else shot more than like eight. Like, those two shot all the shots because they were the only two, I'll be honest, non-Ivy Leaguers on the floor. But the number one recruiting class is on their way to USC, so Juju has her help next season. I expect them to be very good. Juju was crying in the handshake line and all up in the tunnel at the post-game conference. She broke down. That's going to be someone you're going to have to stop. You're going to have to keep her off the title. Like, I'm talking, she's going to be up there in USC Laurel with Cheryl Miller and Lisa Leslie. You're going to have to do a lot to keep Juju Watkins away from multiple titles while she's at USC. The Big Ten, I feel bad for you because she's coming. She's coming guns blazing. She's going to go into Ann Arbor. She's going to go into Columbus. She's not going to care. She's better than you. She's the smoothest freshman that I've seen probably since Paige Beckers. But she's got Paige beat in size. But Paige has her in experience. It was a very popular, very smooth action USC runs where they kind of run Juju off these weave screens and gets her to the left side of the floor. And then she usually works her way back right to get back to her right hand. And they ran it twice out of a timeout, and Paige stole it both times. I mean, it wasn't like she got lucky and Juju put it down, like she poked it. Like, she stole the pass. She weaved through right behind her, and she jumped the pass both times. I believe scored on both. No, she scored on the first one, and then she got fouled, but they didn't call it on the second one. But regardless, she was a fast break by Paige the other way. She stole it both times. That's just from an experience thing. That's from having to. One of the things she could do where ACL is repairing, watch a bunch of film. You can definitely tell Paige was watching a ton of film in her off period, in her off time, and she watched it on USC. But kudos to the ladies for showing out. They had the world's attention. They had everybody watching. Devin Booker scored 50-something points on my New Orleans Pelicans. I didn't watch a single bucket of it. I still have not seen it completely. Not because I don't want to see it, because it just hasn't been covered. The women have completely taken over the basketball scene right now. So kudos to them. Shout out to them. They've earned it. The women's game has always been good. And I love that on Twitter now that's becoming a thing. Like, oh, women, you know, somebody quoted it ignorantly and was like, tweeted them like, man, women, we told y'all, when y'all get a good product, the men are going to have to support it. And everybody's going, no, the women have always been really good. Y'all are just noticing for the first time. Like, I'm old enough to remember Candace Parker at Tennessee, Breanna Stewart winning 4 straight at UConn, Maya Moore at UConn, Brittany Griner and Odyssey Sims at Baylor, South Carolina when this started, with Asia Wilson and her crew. Like, I'm old enough to remember this, right? And so the women's game just didn't get good. It's been good. Simone Augustus, Sylvia Fowles, Tamika Johnson at LSU. The women's game has been good. We're just noticing for the first time. Which, welcome. I'm glad you realize how good the women's game is. I'm glad you realize it's actually more captivating than the men. So, kudos to you. Yeah, you love girls. You love women's college basketball. Go watch the WNBA. You know, they're even more competitive. Because there's 36 draftees into the WNBA every year. Probably 9 of them are going to make the opening day roster. Because there's 144 spots. And I think it's going to drive expansion. I think it's going to do a lot of stuff. Golden State's already bringing in their expansion teams. So it's going to go to 13 teams. I believe they're going to put another team in. And I heard Portland. I heard a couple of city options. Portland is one of the more popular ones. And also they may look at adding a team in Canada because of how well the Canadians sold out. The game, the Sparks had a game over there, and they sold out Scotiabank. It was a crazy environment. So they love their basketball in Toronto. Some would be surprised that Toronto gets a WNBA franchise themselves. But the attention is going to drive the money. The money is going to drive expansion. Expansion is going to drive eyes, right? So kudos to women's basketball for showing up on your stage. You had the world's attention. You delivered. But up next, we're going to shift to Jack's hot take, which is going to be smoke and mirrors draft season. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to discuss, in Jack's hot take, smoke and mirrors NFL draft season. Look, people, we've officially reached that part. We reached it about a week ago, actually, where we've been talking about people who haven't played a game since at latest early January. Like, if you look at Marvin Harrison Jr., dude hadn't played. I don't think he played their bowl game. So, dude hadn't played since, like, December. You look at J.J. McCarthy, he won the title. He was the last person to play. It was the first weekend of January. Drake May hasn't played since like December. Jaden Daniels didn't play in the bowl game. He hadn't played since like late November or December. Like, look at all these top prospects. A lot of them weren't J.J. McCarthy. A lot of them didn't make the playoff, right? So we're talking about people who, even if they had, they hadn't played football at this point in 3 months. 2.5. But by the time the draft comes, 3.5 months for a vast majority of them, sometimes 4.5, depending on who opted out of bowl games. It's smoke and mirror season. smoke and mirror season basically is people are going to try and drum up a controversy. The odds are shifting left and right. Who's going to be the number two pick? Now it's shifting into Drake May going number two to Washington when it's been like Jaden Daniels the entire time. And now it's like, if Drake May's going to go number two to Washington. You know what I'm saying? That smoke and mirrors out. Malik Neighbors being the number one receiver on the board. Although that was out before this time. That's gaining popularity. New England potentially trading with Minnesota for 11 and 23. That's gaining popularity. A lot of different stuff is out there gaining popularity. I mean, one of the football topics, seriously, for 2 days, was DJ Burns, a basketball player at NC State. We discussed it earlier. Legitimately getting, like, he should go to the NC State Pro Day. Like, that's where we're at right now, is that people are trying to find stories, and I think Burns actually would make a solid football player, at least. He'd make more money playing football, even on a training camp deal, than he would in the NBA. I'm just going to be honest with you. But, you know, we're just looking for stuff to talk about. You know, the UFL, you know, is going to start making, hey, real headlines, because there's just nothing for people to watch. You know, your UFL is pretty good football. There's nothing for people to watch, consume, and enjoy right now, right? And so it's smoke and mirror season. Look, if it sounds too off the wall to believe, don't believe it. And that's kind of how I do with the draft coverage. Like, people are saying that Arizona may go, like, tackle or something. Like, they're not drafting Joe Alt, bro. Like, they have Kyler Murray on a very large contract with no one for him to throw the ball to. They're going to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Neighbors. Like, they're not about to let Kyler, even behind a rookie tackle, who's not going to be all that great at first, you would assume, but he still had nobody to throw the ball to. They're going to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. There's reports out now that the Minnesota Vikings may just start Kirk Cousins and wait till next year's draft to get a quarterback. Not Kirk Cousins, Sam Darnold. Why? I love Sam Darnold. I really do. At 11, you'll probably have your pick between J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, and Bo Nix, all of who most teams have between a first and a second round grade. You'll have your pick at 11. And if you don't like him at 11, use 23 and something else to come back up and get another one. Like, you have flexibility to get a quarterback. Unless you're just out on anybody after the big three, I don't get the theory of punting a year. Especially when you got Justin Jefferson, the year of effectively punting a year and saying, okay, we'll let Sam Darnold start. Doesn't matter what the record is. We'll try and get our guy at 25. Like, that's an interesting strategy. You know, I mean, and there's big decisions that's happening. Stephon Diggs, of course, being traded to the Houston Texans. So the Bills are obviously in the receiver market, if they weren't already. They don't have a receiver on the roster. Nope. They're obviously in the receiver market, right? So that's not a smoke and mirrors. Them saying they want, people saying they want receivers, yeah, that's pretty obvious. They just traded Stephon Diggs for no players back. But a second round pick, I believe, this draft. But, you know, there is, you know, nothing getting back to them player wise. So they're in the receiver market. Stuff like that. Other than that, like, if you're a Chiefs fan and you're hearing they're scouting quarterbacks, like, don't believe it. Like, so a lot of fans trip out, and I get questions, I get asked about, you know, what's happening. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would they do that? If you're Chicago and they're hearing you draft anybody but a quarterback, you're insane. At this point, anybody but Caleb Williams, you're insane. Keenan Allen flew to Caleb Williams Pro Day in L.A. Like, Keenan Allen had just, well, he's probably in L.A., but he had just got traded to the Bears. He was at Caleb Williams Pro Day. If that don't tell you what's going to happen with the Bears' number one overall pick, I don't know what does, right? So, really, Washington's on the clock. And I think the NFL used to let you sign a player early if you had the number one pick. The last person to do it from memory was, I believe, Jake Matthews to Tennessee? Tennessee, I mean, one or two. Signed them early. But because the NFL has such a big drama of who the number one pick is going to be, they don't want you to do that. But, like, Jacksonville knew they were picking Trevor Lawrence months in advance. They were already, Urban Meyer and them were installing the offense with Trevor Lawrence, like, months in advance of him being picked. They just couldn't officially announce he signed before the draft because they still have to get drafted. It's weird. The NFL had a bunch of presentation things. It's whatever. But basically, the whole world knows Washington's on the clock. if you're a Commanders fan and you hear anything but they're drafting a quarterback, don't believe it. My point in this is, hey, it's smoke and mirror season. A lot of guys, a lot of pundits, for them, they haven't had a real game of football to talk about in going on 2 months. And if you're a college analyst, you haven't had a real game going on 3 months. They are trying to find any and everything to talk about. Don't get fooled. Come to a good source like myself and a few other guys for good, reliable sourcing and research. But don't get fooled by the nonsense. But that is all I have for today. I hope you guys have a great rest of your Wednesday. Like I say, I'm finishing this up right now. It should be out to you guys within the hour. Editing doesn't take that long for me at all. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. As always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and JTS After Dark on YouTube. Remember, I will put that in the description, so make sure you tune in to JTS After Dark. But that is all I have for today. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.